the Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Abu Dhabi post-fight show with Dan Tom and Fenyo. It was another night of action inside the octagon, and as per usual, we broke it down in our color/off-color kind of way. So sit back, strap in, and enjoy another episode full of content. Let's go.
The sun came up with no conclusions. Flowers sleeping in their beds. The city cemetery's humming. I'm wide awake, it's morning. I have my drugs, I have my woman. They keep away my loneliness. My parents, they have their religion, but sleep in separate houses. I read the body count out of the paper, and now it's written all over my face. No one ever plans to sleep out in the gutter. Sometimes that's just the most comfortable place.
What is up, my friends? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I'm your host, Dan Tom. Analysts is working fine over MMA Junkies, as well as theactionnetwork.com. But on this year program, the Protect Your Neck Podcast, we break down high-level MMA, but in a different way, in a recap way for the post-fight shows. And for those, of course, got to bring on my right-hand man, my co-hostess with the mostest, another fine analyst whose work you can find over on thefights-site.com on their podcast feeds to subscribe, his early prelims podcast. That is my man Fenyo at Fenyo X Guy, and the artist formerly known as Twitter. What's up, Fenyo?
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm still a little bit sick, but we're making it to the recap. Cannot miss the recap, right?
Yeah. Especially this week, we're making it to the end of the line here, because, like, you know, the next week's card, even if I wasn't taking it off, like, even if I was working it, is next week's card really happening? Is it really worth talking about? You know. So, I'm taking it off, obviously, which means no Fenyo. But, Fenyo, you're going to be doing, speaking of plugging your fight site early prelim podcast, is that coming back next week? Can they get their fix there?
Yeah, for sure. Probably Monday.
Sweet.
So if you really, like, you really need to hear someone talk about the rematch, the anticipated rematch between Marcin Tybura and Sergey Spivak, I got you covered.
Yeah, if you're gonna miss my annoying ass throwing shade at yet another rematch, yet another heavyweight headliner in the Apex,
Fenyo will have it. It like checks all the boxes, right? It's like everything in just one fight.
Yeah, just when they need to pick me up most, because, you know, and this isn't a hot take, it's kind of a common take, but, like, you know, I just saw someone post like saying, like, you know, who doesn't really typically complain about UFC cards, but was like, is this now just an undeniable mediocre product at this point that's basically just card filler, you know? And I was like, man, I can't really hate on anybody for having that opinion, you know, Fenyo?
Yeah. I mean, it's been rough. I mean, for example, this week, main event was, like, very important, a high-level fight, but like, overall, this year in the UFC hasn't been great, man. I mean, the hype has been very high, right? Yeah. But it seems like we're stepping into new lows, like, and very frequently.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like I say, like, by the way, we are recapping UFC, and we will recap UFC Abu Dhabi, UFC 8 and ABC 7, UFC Fight Night Sanhagen, Umar Nurmagomedov. But, yeah, like, it's really kind of gotten to that point, and, like I said, like, the word I use most in this era, especially this year, but this era in general of UFC, is impromptu when writing about matchups, because there's so many impromptu, and even when we think about the great moments from past stars stepping up, like Max Holloway, round 5, or the new, not so much new stars, but like the stars of this year that are really coming to prominence this year to the mainstream, like the Poatan Paredes, right?
Yeah.
These are all matchups that were, these motherfuckers stepped in to save events that had no business even having these guys on the cards.
Like even Dustin versus Islam wasn't supposed to happen either, so.
Or it's supposed to be that good, you know, even, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you could, not to be, like, do the negative twist on everything, but you really don't even have to exercise that angle and be too much of a hipster to kind of be like, yeah, not only has it not been as much, but they've gotten really lucky with what they did get.
Yeah, it feels like the UFC is getting rewarded for being shit.
Yeah, speaking of that, we'll get to Shara Bullitt and Shitmadoff there. Which, by the way, like, it's another losing night here, but I don't feel as bad. So, like, does that mean my hate for Patty is just way too strong compared to my hate for Shara Bullitt? Because we'll get to it, folks. So you could say that. Well, you picked Shara Bullitt this time, Dan. Shara Mega Megadoff, and you even you cashed. You actually made some money on him, Dan. And it's like, well, did I? We'll get to it because, we'll get to that fight. But we could argue, it cost me too. It was a so close but so far kind of a night. Basically, I went 12-1 in picks, which was pretty impressive. Of course, the one pick I got wrong, Fenyo, was the lone straight play I made on the card. Yeah. So go figure there. And no hate there as far as the analysis or like close or Rob or if only, there's always the if only, but there's nothing there. Although we will talk about the one thing that does bother us about that fight, which is, I think we will be on the same page there as far as size bullies and whatnot. But went 12-1 overall, Fenyo. So I went 1-4 in my round robin. And we can talk about, it's like, and then I get shit for the round robins again. Like, Dan, you got to trim that, It's costing you money, And you can tell me how close I did or didn't get. But what sucks was that, I don't know if it's because of the lack of sleep, Fenyo, but, like, there's always hindsight, right? But there's also those, like, the hindsight where, like, the card hadn't happened yet, but maybe you already recorded your podcast, right? For your version of it. And for us bettors, we've already maybe made our plays. But then maybe you hear something, and it's something maybe not even something that, like, you hear a play. Sometimes you do, you just straight up will hear a play and be like, that's a really good play, right? And I'll give people props on that or whatever. But sometimes you'll just hear someone say something, and it'll trigger, it might not even be their intention, but it'll trigger a thought that you already had, and you're like, oh, wait a minute. And I usually get these, like, within, like, 24 hours of the card, like, that 11th hour. And so I'm like, I'm hating like my Shara plays, right? But even on the podcast, I'm admitting it even though I'm actually being able to back up my analysis for Nurmagomedov, which we'll talk about first, Nurmagomedov, Sanhagen, folks. Yeah. But I was betting a lot of like the popular Russian chalk, right? And the favorites, in other words, right, Fenyo? And even though I'm shitting on myself as I'm doing that, like, oh, I don't like this or whatever, I still like do overexposure, and we'll get to it, but I did when I went to the counter, they didn't have a lot. I don't know if they don't trust the Shara Bullitt fight, but they didn't offer like props for it at all, which was good. I'm like, I didn't want to take it anyway, so I went with Mirzakhanov round two, and the round robin finally paid off, baby. But again, it was untracked. Like, I had a winning night like the other week, right? But again, it was untracked. I can't count those. Sorry, I don't really get too high on those. But that was kind of ironic. But yeah, from the top though. So Umar Nurmagomedov defeats Corey Sandhagen by unanimous decision. I don't know about 50-45. I was more of the scorecard of majority had it 29-28 Umar going into round four, and I was more partial to the Ryan Wagner hipster outlier scorecard of maybe Sandhagen up 29-28. I was more sympathetic to that argument, but either way. Whichever argument you have, that kind of takes a 50-45 off the table. I'm real curious. I didn't recognize which judge name they said for that one. It wasn't Cartledge. It wasn't my guy Cartledge for that, but so this one I tweeted. Basically, I felt like we were all kind of wrong. I was talking to Fenyo. I didn't talk about this on the podcast because, again, I say what I mean, folks. I legitimately always try to keep my filter clean. And unpolluted as possible, so I can have my own thoughts for my content, whether it's written, plays, or podcasts, right? But then after, I'll kind of listen to my dessert, and like I said, there's only going to be like a few podcasts I listen to, and it's mainly like the analyst podcasts, because of I just couldn't take the patty glazing, mixed with the lead into all the Shara glazing, I was going to have edit a Photoshop edit, like a picture of like a bunch of white stuff on a Shara Bullitt picture and write Glazmadoff. On top, He's a, he plays a donut salesman, not a carpet salesman. Glazmadoff. Carpet salesman, by the way. That was Fenyel's nickname in high school. I don't know what that means. Sorry, I don't even know what that means. I'm just... but
that's God, thank you.
Yeah, I'll take it. But yeah, I listened. I was telling Fenyel, I was like, you know, I feel like everybody was not only... Which is weird, because you always have dissenting opinions, even if it's just like... You know, like, for example, shout out to Heavy Hands. Like, one of them, Phil or Connor, and I love him, but like one, so I mean this in a compliment, but one of them will always be like, you know what, I'll just go the opposite, you know?
Yeah.
Just to keep it interesting. And so whether it's genuine or not, like, you always can count on, like, some of the analysts you respect. Like, not everybody's going to be on the same side, basically. And not only was everybody on the Sandhagen side on this one, everyone was confident about it, which is rare. You know, I always make fun of MMA gambling Twitter because they're so confident, and it makes fun of, oh, I'm down or depressed or self-deprecating Dan or whatever. Like, okay, put me out of the picture. Maybe you know, my colleagues aren't as bad, but Fenyel, I would argue all of us analysts, we're all different, granted, but none of us are like whipping our, it's seldom will you ever see us like the MMA gambling Twitter, like whip our dicks out and be like, oh, this is for sure going to happen. Why is the wrong person favored? Like, we're seldom that bold, and like, and they weren't like that bold or anything, but everybody was pretty damn bold for how they normally are, which got me worried, Fenyel. And the back exposure that was basically, to cut it to make it somewhat short here, was basically the reason why I picked Sandhagen. It served me well, and Aljo as well as Dillashaw, even though that Dillashaw decision was controversial. Yeah. And even though he didn't make much hay with it, which we'll get to here, Fenyel, Umar still won, and I feel like won in a way where, like, we were all kind of wrong, no matter what angles we were taking. I feel like everybody was kind of, and not, like, terribly wrong. It's not like we were like, oh, no way Umar can go five. You know what I'm saying? None of us were saying that, but
yeah,
we were all kind of surprised. You know, to take it from here, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the least likeliest scenario for in the, especially in the analyst sphere, was that they were going to have like a kickboxing match that Sandhagen would lose some volume. I would say that was like the most unlikely scenario, and that's pretty much what happened. Yeah. Obviously, you can argue that it was like the wrestling of Umar that was like neutering the striking of Sandhagen, but I feel like everyone was playing, if any angle was being played this week, was that it was the depth of the striking of Corey Sandhagen that was going to get him down, the volume, the pace. Sure. And none of those actually showed. And to be honest, like, it was like one of those classic, like, bizarre world. And that are very common in MMA for reasons that we have talked about in the past. Mm-hmm. But it was like what we saw in to go back to another, like, striker versus wrestler fight, Dustin Poirier versus Islam Makhachev, with the wrestler doing a lot better in the striking than expected, and the striker defending more takedowns than expected. But
yes,
but on top of that, it was I feel like, I mean, to get into the analysis, because sure, I didn't watch much tape before this fight, because I didn't do a preview or anything. Kind of took the week off because I was sick, so I was going into the fight with just my, like, my previous idea of the fighters. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know much what to think. I picked Sandhagen, like, non-officially, out of, like, just for being the more proven fighter, and because the wrestling has been looking pretty good by Sandhagen lately, right? The way he has been wrestling against Chito Vera and Song Yadong, it's not only that he got takedowns, it was like takedowns that you get when you have been spending time in the mats, right? He looked like he has been, like, actually wrestling, learning the craft of wrestling more than just takedowns for MMA. So I was pretty impressed with that. So I was like, okay, yeah, I expect Sandhagen to be the better striker here. To be fair, other than the knockout, I thought how Niverselos was handling Umar Nurmagomedov pretty well on the stand up. I thought he was like actually winning that fight before the knockout. Yeah. So, but then some of the issues that I've had with Sanhagen post TJ Dillashaw, because I feel like there's a marked difference between Sanhagen pre Dillashaw and post Dillashaw, right?
Yes.
And he has talked about that on interviews about and that's why he got so good at wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Because he was so mad that he lost that fight on the account of like some leg kicks and being taken down, in his own words, that he wanted to like, he said like literally that he wanted to craft a style that was made to win rounds in the eyes of the judges, which is very weird because now the judges are trending in a more damage oriented trend. And Sanhagen, it seems like he's going kind of old school. Like he's going like into this like mid to late 2000s with the controlling, with the neutralizing. Like for example, you can tell that he was trying to get the optics of moving forwards a lot in this fight, but at the same time he didn't want to be hit, so he was being very careful with that. And he was like avoiding the pocket exchanges a lot. He didn't. You can tell that Sanhagen doesn't want to leave anything to chance nowadays, right? Like he wants to be clean. If he gets like hit at open space, that's fine. I can get back at him. But he doesn't want any chaos in his fight, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to have this very clean fight on the outside, even though he was pressuring. And I think that cost him really. We were expecting Sanhagen to have an edge when it came to the striking depth. But Umar kept it very simple with but some very good ideas actually. I don't know if that's who's to credit here, if it's like Khabib or Javier Mendes or who, but it's like countering combinations, counter kicking, and making the threat of the takedown very obvious throughout the fight, even though he didn't shoot that much throughout the fight. But for example, the Felder has this very old school idea that you shouldn't go try to catch the kicks, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that play, that was, even though he didn't get takedowns off caught kicks very often, Umar, but I got the impression that he was getting like really inside the head of Corey.
Yeah.
Reaching for the legs every time that he was trying to kick. So Corey was always like, I'm not trying to counter here, I'm trying to defend takedowns, and he was like really neutered in that sense. I don't know if you got the same impression.
Yeah, I thought the same. I thought it was smart that he was trying to do it, because if you look at the takedowns that Corey has gotten scored on him, through stats, if you actually go watch it, one, it's a lot of it's bullshit. Like I don't know if I called it out last podcast, but I wrote a note here for it. Bad takedown stats for Sanhagen Vera. They've got a takedown attempt from Vera that there was no takedown attempt in round two. Like again, another reason was just like I fucking hate stats, and in this game, you know, like applying them is arguable and controversial alone. Much less the fact that the well that they're drawn from, the way that they're accrued and accounted for and represented as a fact, is bullshit, because they come from these same sites that get it fucking wrong all the time.
Yep.
So even if you are, even if I said, oh, Dan, don't be a contrarian, come drink from the religious, come drink the Kool-Aid of stats. Okay. The problem is you're not even getting the fucking right Kool-Aid. It's saying it's cherry Kool-Aid. It's not even cherry fucking Kool-Aid. That's the fucking problem. Even if I want to believe, I can't even get the right shit. Anyway, sorry, that pisses me off. But like, But yeah, when you go watch the takedowns, it was from caught kicks. So I was like, well, that's smart. Even if he can't get him down, he's probably going to make Sanhagen shelve a lot of his kicks. Which you could argue was the case. You know, anecdotally, that's kind of what we're going off of. You know, you can't go off of the stats in general. But especially, again, to add another layer on how much the stats are bullshit, you'll get different numbers live as well as the night of. So even if you want to play the stats, you have to wait until they settle the day after. Because most of them will have a process. They'll go back through and count. Because, again, it's so hard to do live, right? And, again, they still mess up even with those processes and checks and balances to their credit. But yeah, it seemed like he was shelving a lot of those. And, you know, you had some great tweets talking about it, Fenyo, and just like, he had the things there, but it was like, he wasn't able to build off it. And like, he kind of, you know, is he losing that killer instinct? What's the questions there? And I think I was responding something like, it's a mix of both, like, genuinely getting good at something, but something else fails you, like Koscheck losing his wrestling after really focusing on his kickboxing for a while.
Yeah.
Kind of those examples. And the, you know, classic, right, the capital T technical. Not that Corey really is going, but it's kind of doing his own version of that. And whether it's like the version we make fun of is capital T technical or some well-meaning, genuine advancements, we've also seen that kind of just take away, even when it's well-meaning, it can sometimes take away from the heart of someone's game. And at the end of the day, that's the balance, right? You want to improve, you want to grow, you want to get better, you want to protect yourself, but you also don't want to change what makes the fighter the fighter. Does that make sense?
I think you, it's a very bad sign when during a fight it is not very clear what a fighter wants to do. And I was never sure what was the end goal, the end game for Corey in this fight. Because he was like getting success here and there with some kicks, especially leg kicks. He got a lot of success with front kick to the body that he was hurting Umar in the first half of the fight. But then he was not like going back at it with any intensity. He was like really trying to have this like taking turns and expecting to get the better of those exchanges, and wasn't being the case just because Umar was more willing to put volume out there. And it's very weird because when Corey like popped up in the scene, he was never like this huge puncher, right? But he was like very defined volume guy. He was putting numbers out there. It wasn't just the variety. It was like the, for a lot of guys, what allows them to do variety is the volume, because you can throw like spinning kicks and spinning elbows and knees and all that kind of shit. But if you're doing it like very sparsely, all of those are like big movements that you are announcing, right? Mm-hmm. But when you mix it in all in the onslaught, it is a lot easier to get going with the variety. And Sanhagen was a guy that was attacking like all three levels, putting numbers constantly for those, especially that you just talk about stats, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was like a lot of significant strikes per minute, very active. And now that he has this new focus on defense, right? But it seems like it is not even defense. It's like he wants to control the pace because he trusts that the defense is more reliable at a slower pace, right? But I don't think that's playing into his strengths, especially in a fight like this one.
Yeah, and not to pin it on Whitman or anything, but it's very similar to Rose Namajunas, where like Rose quietly like made legit advancements in her wrestling, both offensively and defensively. And even when she's showing that against some of her biggest threats in the division, stylistically, the biggest wrestlers, Carla, or in this case, Umar, and proving they could get out of it, they just couldn't stack the numbers up, right? Like, Rose was able to prove, like, Carla wasn't able to get anything done with the takedowns she got in that rematch, right? And not to compare those two fights, because they're obviously, like, way different, but, like, you know, like, it was the same thing. He couldn't like build off of it, you know. And it's almost like, you know, part of the reason why I picked him by sub too was because for me, I feel like it's so easy to parallel Corey Sanhagen off of Carlos Condit, you know. And I figure why not? There's the K guard. There's so many similarities. For as much as, and I do this too, obviously, but for as much as like everybody does it with black fighters, going, oh, every black fighter is John Jones or whatever, like. Like, you know, how, like, this is actually, like, a legit situation to do it. And, you know, it's arguably fair. Why not? Hey, let's do it to a white guy for once, you know? But no, and I like both Sanhagen and Condit. It's obviously, it's all tongue in cheek here. But there's a lot of similarities, right? And I look at it and I go, Condit kind of really didn't get a lot of focused grapplers too. And you look at it, whether it was like deceptively tougher fights than they should have been, like Hiro Mitsumura and WEC, to fighters that you wouldn't think are big wrestling threats, but they used it to get wins on him, like the first Kampman fight when he first comes over to the UFC.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even after, you know, working with Ricky Lundell, which, hold that thought for a second, on his wrestling, we see him get Damian Maia in 2016, and he just gets run through, right? Like, all that scramble exposure, it just backfires, and we're like, oh, maybe this was kind of always the case. It's not that Carlos Condit wasn't awesome. Maybe this was just kind of always the case, right? And then even, you know, granted, it's way post-prime Condit at that point and further, and he's even, like, you know, getting submitted and guillotined in random, like, scrambles and guys who aren't really putting grappling pressure, right? I don't know if it was Neil Magny or Alex Oliveira who's coming to mind right now, but it was one of those random fights he took toward the end, those ugly fights he took toward the end. So part of me always puts Corey Sandhagen in that kind of mold, right? And if you look at it in there, you know, right around the same time, you know, again, you can age a little longer at welterweight, and Carlos Condit was around for a minute. But they're kind of, you know, Corey Sandhagen is kind of approaching that same point of his career where Condit started trying to get capital T technical and work on his wrestling. Again, he brought in Ricky Lundell, like I just mentioned, right? Like, he was actually making efforts. Now, Carlos was, again, both older, and it's a higher weight class, so not to do the whole, you know, jank weight, but, like, not to do the whole stereotype.
But he kind of scales, right?
Yeah, it scales. Like if Carlos Condit was better, not that he wasn't good, but if he was better in the sense of a bantamweight where everybody has to be a better wrestler, right? Everybody's a better scrambler, right? Which we'll talk about an Umar point here in a second before we push on. But, like, you look at it, you're like, yeah, maybe Carlos makes the same, you know, goes the same direction as Sandhagen, maybe gets a little more offensive with his wrestling, right? Which we didn't really see too much, but Carlos was trying to do the same stuff. He was going through the same growing pains at the same time. So
I'm very similarly, Carlos Condit also tried to, he approached it in a different way, but without getting, like, a lot better with his defense, he was a lot more controlled, and the way that Condit did it was, like, throwing everything with less power. You see that he got into this very, like, point fighting style. Like, he was still doing a lot of volume.
Yeah.
But he was taking a lot less risk. He was way more violent early in his career. Yeah. And then you see fights like Robbie Lawler, like Nick Diaz, where he's content with just, like, putting some volume for the judges and being happy with that. And Corey on the other side, like, Corey's like doing the same, but instead of, like, throwing, like, softer strikes, he's throwing less strikes, right?
Yeah.
He's a lot more picky with his exchanges. He's like, okay, I need this opening to kick here. Yeah. I don't want to get countered. And similarly, and scaling for the difference, because obviously Sandhagen, way better wrestler than Condit, right? But right. Still, as you said, I feel like Sandhagen has shown, and because he hasn't been fighting these, like, these committed wrestlers, as you said, Corey showed in this fight, similar to Condit, that he's a very good mat wrestler, but out in the open, he's not that good. Like,
yeah.
And that was, like, the big problem with Condit, that out in the open, it looks like he hasn't ever wrestled, but he went, when he found himself on the mat, he was, like, pretty decent, actually. Like, he has some wrestling chops. As a lot of fighters find out, like Kampman in the rematch, Johnny Hendricks, even though that was, like, more jiu-jitsu approach, but right. Still, like, he can grapple, right? As Sandhagen too, Sandhagen didn't have a lot of answers to the shots of Umar.
Mm-hmm.
He was always, like, very deep into getting to defend these takedowns. He was not denying them very early on. He was not attacking the wrist. He was not taking an angle. He was getting into this, like, wrestling exchange.
Yep.
And even though Corey has gotten very good at that, I think that you gotta believe that that's still Umar's world, right?
Yeah.
So
I honestly really liked it at first. Like, I was tweeting, messaging you. Maybe I was catastrophizing because I was like, oh, I'm losing all the bets now. But I was like, I'll get ready, because he was defending takedowns and looking good. Like, I was more sympathetic to 29-28 scorecards again for Sandhagen than Umar. Not that either were crazy, But he was fighting the hands, which was great because, again, if you're not going, I was right about the hardwiring to expose your back. So instead of fixing something that's so hardwired, they learn how to kind of put a band-aid on it, which is like, let's attach some hand fighting. And in the previous samples, he was kind of slow to the hand fight a bit, Sanhagen. Not that he didn't do it, but like, it would take him a while, you know, like a guy, he'd be like, oh, am I covering the head? Am I covering the hips? And then he would have to wait for a guy to go for like a pronounced single leg before he goes, oh, okay, now I'll go wizard and grip separation. But like, he was getting right on the hands right away. Plus he was doing his normal thing where he gets really tall and uses his height to get tall and make people really sell out to get to his back. And he ends up in that weird spot where like, I always re-show that scramble with a Sun Tzu. And it was really apropos here because it was the same, it wasn't the same thing, but it was the same position where Sanhagen smartly kills it by, he's always good about hooking a leg, you know? When in doubt, grab a wrist, but also hooking legs kill scrambles as well. It keeps them from turning to either hip, getting on all fours, basing out, having real power, explosion. All you got to do is hook that leg. So Sanhagen, even though his back was exposed, he would always hook that leg and then until he was ready to stand up and fight hands. And, you know, I don't know if Umar was trying to adjust for it in real time and or... because these guys both seem like they planned well for each other, right?
Yeah.
And or he planned ahead by going for that more like... like he wasn't selling out to get both hooks. He was okay with getting a single hook and almost going for like a twister position where he was trying something, some kind of hammer lock, some kind of, you know, arm isolation, crucifix style, like from the rear.
Yeah.
Like he kept going off to the side. And so I was like, okay, is he trying to do something there? And he kept losing it. But again, it's his first 5-round fight. You got to remember that Khabib, too, the reason why Khabib set takedown records is because they count mat returns as takedowns in MMA, A, back to the stats. But B, like the Abel Trujillo fight where he does it 22 times because he couldn't hold him down, right? And so when he can't hold down Abel Trujillo, while in the meantime, you know, similar kind of to Sanhagen, you got Tony Ferguson, like, Granby rolling repeatedly back when he still had his hips and knees attached. Like, Granby rolling repeatedly out of Josh Thompson's takedown attempts. You can start to see why, you know, people like myself were like, oh, Tony Truthers, which we'll talk about Tony Ferguson and give him his due. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is something to that if you can do that, right? And
no, yeah, for sure.
And Sanhagen was doing that well. And before I push it back to you, I just want to say, Umar, I'm not going to credit him. I'm not going to put a mark against him too hard. Like, yeah, I was in the sub, obviously, and I'm not holding that against him. But, like, even as an analyst, holding that against him, because you got to remember that Khabib, which is going to be unfairly or not his point of comparison, Khabib had to go through these same growing pains in the octagon before he figured out how to hold people down. And Umar's doing it in a slightly tougher division where everybody can scramble even better than lightweight.
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking the same thing as you watching live, because like, yeah, Corey has this like very big tendency to turtle and exposing his back, right? And I actually like the approach of keep doing that but find solutions, mm-hmm. because as you said, it seems like it is so hardwired to his style. So him having more options from there now, I thought it was very good. I'm not sure if it was like the best approach for this matchup in particular, because like Umar has a lot of options if he doesn't happen to take the back.
Right.
As you said, he was like trying to go to these crucifixes, cross leg right, and those like funky positionings. But so even though like Sanhagen was able to scramble out of most of those positions, you kind of felt that it was like a bit sketchy, right? Like if they keep happening, Umar was going to be the one that figures something out, because it felt like it was more his element. But actually, like moving forward, it's something that I thought was very, very good, a good approach to take by Sanhagen. That was one of the things that I actually liked about the things that he showed in this fight.
Yeah, same here. And real quick, I'll ask your opinion on this. But to your point and what your point said about earlier about the wrestling in the open, once once Umar was able to settle position and get him down, then we did see why it felt sketchy, and we did see why people like myself, you know, even though I'm like, oh, he was close to submitting, like, no, he wasn't close. I don't think he was close to submitting Sanhagen, right? But in my defense, I don't think it's too crazy to say that, like, you could see why I thought that, right? Like, once they did get on the ground, like, if there was longer and that those exchanges started happening earlier in the fight, maybe it's a different fight, you know? Maybe Umar is more encouraged to lean back into his wrestling, whereas you hear, once it's not working, the corner smartly going, just breathe, and we're going to focus on striking, you know? And not that he couldn't, and not that that wasn't part of the plan either, but I'm, and I hope I don't sound like I'm coping too hard, because again, I don't think he got close to submitting him, but I don't think my analysis was too crazy on that either. I think we did see a fight where that could play out, right?
Yeah, especially... I feel like if this was like three rounds, Umar would have gone a lot harder with the wrestling, right?
Yeah.
But considering that this was like his first five-round fight, I mean, I'm not sure if it's like his first of his career. Probably
I think it was.
You do know?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
But obviously at this level of opposition, and they were like kind of concerned about the cardio, which I think is fair. He was doing all right in the stand-up, and actually there's something that I actually like about AKA, and I always like, is that they're not afraid to make very, very basic adjustments. Like, mm-hmm. Like Javier and Javier both were telling him, you need to punch more. And he's like, you don't need to go like super like, oh, take this angle here and show him the feint and then go... Sometimes you just need to tell your fighter, hey, we need more volume here, push forward. Some of these very, very easy to do adjustments, like very big picture, they can work very well. Especially because, like, I feel like Umar needed that encouragement. Like, and I felt it worked very well because of that, because he was like, I feel like Umar went to the corner, like, I don't know how that round went.
Yeah.
And Javier and Habib were both like, no, you're doing good. Strike more. Put more volume on him. He's not liking it.
Yes.
And I feel like they were right. Like, Corey was not expecting Umar to be so eager to strike, I feel.
Yes. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I agree on all the mindset for both Corey and Umar. I think they both had that mindset. And I did too. You know, like I said, I'm tweeting you like, oh, I don't know how this is going, right? But it goes. And I think, you know, it's a mix of... We've seen this that basic John Jones meta, but you see it more pronounced because these guys are more pronounced takedown threats, and they're fighting, they're actually active in this current day meta, whereas John Jones isn't, where you need more volume. But it reminds me of like Timur Valiyev, who like is another guy where it's like, he's a good example, because even though he gets the Dagestani rub, like, ooh, right? Like, he was a guy where it's like, he's not Khabib's cousin. Like, this dude was, he actually didn't start fighting till late in life. Like, he was an accountant. Like, this guy got an accounting degree, okay? Like, so I always laugh when everyone's like, forged in the fires of Dagestan. I'm like, okay, Valiyev's good, but, like, he's not that guy. Like, he is, like, a nerd. He looks like a nerd. Like, he acts like he's got, like, a sense of humor about himself. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, I was an accountant and, like, engineering. And, like, he doesn't have any master of sports. He didn't do any of that when he was a kid even, like, maybe, like, a little bit. But, like, but what you see is that because people, he is a competent grappler. He's kind of good everywhere, like, all terrain, right? And he does have that fear of grappling established, that even though he's not like a slick, like Dustin Poirier shifting combination boxer, he's not like a one punch deadening Conor McGregor counter striker, right? These guys who fight from, but they fight from both stances. They kick, you know, it's very kicks, right? It's a variation of kicks. They can sit down on a hard straight shots every once in a while, and they will throw straight shots, right? It's not the typical, like, Fedor days where all the Russians are throwing casting punches. Like, we're seeing these guys throw, you know, like very much John Jones. It's a lot of flash and flare with a lot of, you know, real basic counters to keep everybody honest in between. And even though you don't have to be the most highest volume, or you can be a little janky, right? Like, this is an approach janky guys can actually do really well with, right? Fenya, where you don't have to pair your defense into your offense into your offense, right? And almost get lost in the sauce like you can, like a Corey Sanhagen even. Like, you can just hit them and be effective. I think Anthony Smith was saying, it was like, Corey Sanhagen, like, by all counts, whether you're doing the eye test or technical stuff you like. You could say he's the better fighter. He's the greater fighter. He's the more skilled fighter. But Anthony Smith was like, Umar was just the more effective fighter tonight, though. And we see that. It's not a lot of fancy stuff. It's a lot of just, it's a lot of variation, but it's consistent variation, maybe built on a wrestling thread. Is that like the basic genes to what we're talking about? That approach that was working here?
And I feel like one thing that, I don't know if it is by design or by chance, but I feel like these Russian fighters, these Sambo background guys, especially the ones that have this overlap with like Sanda, who are more kicky, mm-hmm. Are exploiting this lack of counters to the kicks in MMA.
Yeah.
So they know that they can kick a lot, and the worst that is going to happen to you is that you're maybe getting a counter leg kick, even.
Yeah.
And considering that they are not afraid to go to their backs because they can wrestle from their backs, so they're exploiting that like super hard, I feel. And in fact, if you... And because they train with other like Sanda guys and that kind of stuff, they are themselves like pretty decent at countering kicks. In fact, Umar was countering off the kicks with his own kicks a lot more than Corey was in this fight. So,
well, that's what I like about this, Finio, is we get to get some nice post-fight analysis here. I know we went long, folks, and we're going to push on right here in a second because the free preview I can already tell is going to be longer than my podcast this week. By the way, Finio, did you see that? I got done like an hour this week.
The hour, yeah, you were like fast and.
We can't believe that shit. I know. It's like I should be depressed more, huh? But Umar covers at least the parlay, so I at least get something off that. But I will say this: so if you got a sub, Finio, we would have had a winning night on all fronts, right? Now,
yeah.
But since I already had a winning round robin, I had the plus 500 and the plus 125 already cashed from the Chiesa sub and the Mirzakhanov round two. If I get the plus 280 on top of that with a Nurmagomedov sub, that alone is a $400 to $500 swing, a 4 to 5 unit swing. And if he gets that sub in round two or round three, which I had tickets for, that's another 4 to 5 unit swing. So it was almost a $1,000 swing on him getting a sub, depending on which round, which is kind of crazy to think about. Not that it was close, but you know, it was just one of those.
Yeah.
One of those weird, funny things to kind of think about there. But Sharmagomedov defeated Mikhail Oleksiyuk. So maybe it's good that I went Donnie Clifton style MMA gambling Twitter style, because I usually don't do parlays. But a lot of people have been, you know, who have been watching from the sidelines, giving me some real constructive feedback, which I appreciate. Like, not being dicks or whatever, like actually giving me like real feedback. Shout out to Pepe Silvia and the other. Folks there in the comments, Pepe's friend of the show, but yeah, they're like, you know, stick to the money lines maybe or this or that. But I was kind of like, well, my only money line play was Elvis Brenner, and that was the only pick I got wrong on the card. But these were money lines that you put together for a parlay, and you bring the price down, right? And Sharmagomedov, I had that, so at least I got something. But I also played him by KO, and then stupidly had him in round one, which I'm like, why? That's Mikhail's round, right? But in my defense, when I went back, I'm like, no, you actually had reasoning for this, Dan, because even though that is his round, he is going to have to come at such a high pace. And because Mikhail is coming off of a first round finish and he got his arm fucked up and you don't know how healthy he is, right? We were talking about these things, UFC picking these guys in particular to turn around for their hype products, you know? And then even without that, Shara's style was going to bring out the best, right? Which was true in Mikhail. You know, it was going to really make him come forward, right? So I figured it was really just going to be do or die for both guys at that point, you know? Not just Mikhail, like it usually is round one or bust generally for him, but I feel like it was going to make such a tornado. It was so volatile. Which, you know, you could argue that round one was the most action round, you know, but on both sides even. Even though, you know, Shara was able to kind of pull away. But goddamn, for a do-or-die guy on short notice with, you know, a suspect arm brought in, all those things. You hear the announcer saying it, they go, especially in this era, you know, but they don't say like post-USADA. But, dude, the stamina and the staying power, both are two different things, stamina and staying power, by the way.
Yeah.
Mikhail usually doesn't have both those, and my God, did he all of a sudden have it in spades tonight, Fenyo?
I feel like, because I was picking like Charbullet here, sure. Mostly because I feel like Mikhail is like past it.
Right.
But he looked past it in a different way, right? I thought like, oh, he's getting like more frail, more like he's losing confidence.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that tonight. It was like he's like more unsure and a bit sloppier technically. I think that are the two things that allowed Charapulet to win this fight, because it's something that both of us like saw before, is that okay, if this was like Oleksiyshuk in like top shape, this is a very bad fight for Charbullet, right?
Right.
And even though he showed up with like cardio, with staying power, he didn't look his best at all,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No. Lost. Looked real lost.
With the punch selection and very picky. And that's the thing that made him good when he was good, is that he was not picky with exchanges. He was just throwing everything, any chance he had. But here he was doubting himself in a lot of exchanges. You can tell he was hurting Charbullet into the right hook, because Oleksiyshuk is southpaw, right? He was just not throwing it like most of the time, so he was allowing him to circle, and he got success with the left hand from the inside angle that he likes to do so much. Like he tricks you into circling to the outside, because they feel like, okay, now he's out of range, and I'm pretty much like McGregor, but with like very wonky mechanics. He pivots on the inside and follows you with the left hand, and he actually caught Charbullet a few times with that punch.
He did.
But he was like not committing to the body punching either. He was like getting easy to the body of Charbullet and not getting countered actually, but he was like scared of the elbows and the knees, I guess. I don't know.
Speaking of scared, like, did he not know what to do when he took Sharmagomedov down, or Sharmagomedov just comically is he just comically fast at getting up?
Yeah, I mean, the scramble looked all right by Charbullet. I was more concerned with when he finally got top position on the third round.
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything, because he has shown very good ground and pound in the past.
Yes.
And that's a classic of old fighters, right?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
They get on top and they do not get going from top position, especially if they are strikers. They lose all the ground and pound, the dynamic there.
You know, for as much as I give shit to Glazmadoff there, again, the body shots were prominent. The commentators were talking about it. Granted, they were glazing him over too, but you know, they were talking about it. That was there. And in my Southpaw report, which I do, I know I was late on this one. I apologize, guys, but I do extended ones because I'm not limited by Elon on my Substack. And I did write, like, you see it more in his kickboxing, which is even more fucking backwards, right? Because it's like reverse Jan Jacek. Where usually Muay Thai kickboxers, they come in and they build their kicks in steadily because they don't want to get taken down.
Yeah.
Whereas he doesn't want to get taken down, but he builds his punches in steadily. And in his kickboxing fights, he did it too. But in his kickboxing fights, he punched a lot more, which I guess makes sense. There's no takedown threat. But even in his kickboxing fights, it's not till round two he doesn't start punching. He never starts punching until round fucking two. Shara, right? But he actually has some decent lead hand, like some check hooks, which I was saying he was going to go for, and he did. He will punch to the body and use his lead hand. Like, he will do some smart stuff, and in that third round, there was a sequence that was really impressive. But for him, I thought it was really impressive as far as his takedown defense, his IQ, circling away from the cage. Like, he was doing the right things before getting taken down on a previous takedown exchange. I thought that was really impressive. That's a really good sign. And it actually kind of pissed me off, because I'm like, oh, crap. He's not going to be as easy as it's... Now we're really going to need the UFC to give him a bad matchup, because it's not going to be one of those things where, like, well, if this guy, you know, decides to go to it, he's good enough to, but will he? You know, I'm already scared off of those enough as it is when it comes to hype products. But now especially, because you know, he actually is showing signs of improvement, to give him credit.
No, yeah, he still is overhyped, obviously.
Sure.
But yes. I think it's like pretty safe to say that he's like pretty okay. He can hang no problem in the UFC middleweight division. If they want to give him like a good matchmaking, he can put quite a few wins in a row. Actually, you would have to go like to actually good guys for me to like being like super confident. Like if you want like unranked guys that would beat Sharabullet, I would have to say that the only ones who would be like, I don't know, like Malkoon, like Robocop, and
I can't trust Muniz.
No, Muniz is getting kicked in the head.
yeah. He's gonna fall apart, you know, trying to do something stupid.
And especially strikers, because they are so bad at dealing with kicks. The only one that I would feel like confident about, it would be Petrosian, because he actually knows how to deal with kicks.
So in other words, we actually need to really get used to, like, same with the Patty, unfortunately. We have to get used to all the glazing.
And they're not going to give him, like, Robocop or Petrosian or
Malkoon.
They're not doing any of those three, so...
No. We're going to push on, but, man, I feel like, Fenyo, if we had... and, folks, you guys can chime in if we have Protecting Neck Podcast merch. You know, I feel like this would be a more of a fun T-shirt, the Glaze Madoff T-shirt, you know?
Yeah, the Glaze Madoff, yeah.
Do like a cartoon version of Shara holding like a Krispy Kreme box looking of donuts, and you can like you could edit some air quotes frosting on his hair and his face, and it just says Glaze Madoff.
We can do the font to look like donuts with the glazing.
Yes, like this almost like Ninja Turtles, like the Secret of the Ooze, you know, Glaze Madoff. he's got his evil eye just staring at you. Oh, that's great. We know what happened to that eye. It's because it's from all the glazing. You guys want Char to lose both eyes? Stop glazing so hard at him, guys. Stop shooting all your glaze at him.
He's going to lose the other one if you
Well, I used to joke. We're gonna push on. Davison Figueiredo defeats Marlon Vera. There's a good transition. I used to joke because before Manel Cup was the athletic guy everybody jerked off. For flyweights, like the one flyweight everybody got excited over, you know, like right now it's Manel Cop, but before that it was Figueiredo, right? Everyone's like, oh
yeah,
Mickey, oh, Dice Together. I gotta do the oh, Shara, pull it, ah, sorry, I did that for the culture, but like people do the same thing for Figgy, and I would joke like guys, like you guys know Figueiredo is like not gonna make it to the scale, like he's the commission's gonna pull him for a red dick because you guys are just jerking him off so hard. And like then he started, it was like weight related, obviously, and he's like having trouble going to the scales. I'm like, you guys see what I'm talking about? Your guys are having trouble making it to the scale. Stop rubbing them off so hard. Jesus. But yeah, it's gonna be the same thing. Figueiredo though, he defeats Marlon Vera by unanimous decision. I'm not gonna bump my chest out because this is one of those ones where, and maybe this is maturity on my part, Fenyo, but I'm not gonna get lost in speculation city on woulda, shoulda, coulda. You know, this is one of those fights where I called it exactly, you know, pretty much, as far as not just the wrestling, but even the more impactful shots, even though Figueiredo's not looking as good, obviously, we can talk about that. But because of that, I don't feel any regret for staying away from this fight, man. I didn't feel good about playing this pre-flop, and even though the read and the pick was right, I'm not going to bump my chest out, man. I have no regrets not playing this one, but it did play out, as I expect, Figueiredo by decision. What did you think of this one, Fenyo?
And I thought that the fight proved you right to not bet on this one, right? Because at the end of the day, even though your rights were correct, it came down to that knockdown at the end, right?
Yes, I think so.
Like, it was, like, trending very on Cheeto's favor at that point. And then you never know how that exchange goes if you play it out again, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this fight mainly is that it's a two fight. It's a fight with two guys that are dealing with a lot mentally. Two guys that were at one time that were super sure that they were invincible, and now they are not sure that they are. And But I think the big difference is that when Figueiredo feels like the fight is slipping away, he's willing to go there, to go and risk it. And Chito is like, maybe I'll risk it, or maybe I'll stay here. yeah. Like Chito doesn't give a shit anymore. It's so hard for him to push. And when he finally started pushing, he faced a little bit of a setback with the knockdown. And he was fine. Like, he got up super hard. Right. I mean, super fast. But he stopped throwing immediately.
Yeah, it reinforced it. Yeah.
Like, it was crazy. Like, he stopped throwing at all. He could have taken that round back, right?
Like, yeah.
Was crazy. He was winning the fight at the end.
Well, that's the thing, is like, that's the one thing you've seen, like, whether it's on the feet, like with the, at certain points, you could argue even at the O'Malley fight with his body language and spirit. And then even though he recovers from this one well, it's like he talked himself out, like all the stuff he was struggling with before just all got reinforced right there, and you saw it. And then he stops throwing, like, yeah, you said, for a minute and a half. And you even go back to his early fights, like from, like, what was it with, like, Marco Beltran, like, I'm talking about way back in the day, like, Mark Goddard was scolding him, like, Chito, listen, Chito. Like, he gets really, like, or Davey Grant even, right? Like, he gets really, like, he can get thrown off his game, whether it's emotion, the fight not going well, or he not, you know, in his own head. And I think that's one of the more frustrating things about being a Chito Vera fan. It's very frustrating to be a fan of his because of those factors, it doesn't make, that doesn't breed very much consistency, right? You know, much less much less process, which is already kind of arguably lacking.
Yeah, and
so,
and I feel like Figueiredo, you can tell a lot of doubt in him as well.
Yes,
as another former, like, overconfident fighter, right?
Yeah.
But when Chito got going, second half of the second round, and Figgy was not getting the takedowns, he was so concerned. Like, he was like, his face, you could tell.
Yeah.
He was secretly on the outside. He was hating his life. But then when it came to actually, like, put it on the line,
yeah,
that's what I said. Like, Figueiredo is a winner. And Chito is not a winner in that sense. Not saying that he's a loser, but but Figgy was like, okay, what I'm doing, like, I'm staying on the outside. I'm not getting the takedowns. I'm losing the exchanges. I stand my ground. I'll gamble this shit.
Yeah, I think it was more. You were absolutely right, but I think an even better way to phrase it is, it's not that Chito was a loser. It was more Figueiredo was showing why he's a championship level fighter.
Yeah,
I think that was the difference, right? Because the decisions he was making, both when it wasn't going his way, he was showing why he was a championship level fighter, and then after the knockdown, yeah, was it as clean or as, you know, did it look as, you know, like a prime Figueiredo? No. But if you saw, he was getting right back to countering jabs, going to the body, and he was coming to life again. And I love seeing that. Like, it felt like, you know, like he was almost like doing like a, he was cosplaying himself versus Joe B or something, you know, like for a second there. Like he was, you could tell he was feeling it, even though he was tired. He's not the same, but you could tell he was feeling it. And I liked that, you know, I liked that he didn't just resort to, like, okay, I got to clinch or play it safe. The knockdown got me ahead of the round. Now I got, which I get, that's also strategical thinking.
Yeah.
But he still showed that dog in him a bit too, which I did like. I did like it. Yeah, I got to give him credit in that third round there.
And it was especially important against Chito, right?
Yes.
Because he put him in his head that I heard you worse than you heard me, so now what?
Yeah, well, you saw it, because I was immediately thinking, and I like Chito, right? And I'm not one to think like this, but as soon as that was happening, I was almost thinking, like, what I would be thinking as Davison, being like, oh, you said you're going to kick my ass? You're doing your typical Chito Vera, I'm an asshole, I'm going to be an asshole, you know, to, because it's not that he's an asshole, but he just, it's kind of just who Chito is, like, he gets himself up for the fight. So it was nothing personal, but, like, if I was Figueiredo, it's just like, oh, you're going to hurt me now, huh? Like, and you saw him.
Yeah.
I saw it, too, when he you see him, and the commentary made a note of it. Like, he defended a takedown, or he faked a takedown, and he got him to sell out hard on it, a sprawl, and Figueiredo just pointed at him a smile. Yeah, and was like, oh, old Figgy's back. Okay, he's feeling it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, when the shithead comes out, that means they're doing good, you know? Michael Chiesa defeated Tony Ferguson. Again, speaking of veteran fighters kind of in their heads in different ways, different stages of their career. This one sadly went, I think, as most of us expected, right? To keep it kind of short and sweet here.
Yeah.
As far as the recap of the fight goes.
Yeah, I mean, the only good thing is that he didn't get, like, super hurt on the feet or anything by Chiesa. Even though Chiesa landed some good punches.
Yeah, I was joking in my, which I share with you, by the way, hopefully you guys are digging the alternative card format, because, like, even though I'm, like, usually, like, dead beat, but it's, like, the last thing I do, it's one of the more fun pieces I do, because I just get to talk shit and use a bunch of GIFs and, like, fun references. But, like, for this one, I was like, oh, it's like, welcome to Tony Ferguson's Torture Hour. You know, like, that's what it feels like every fight of his is now. You know, it's like, it's a Tony Ferguson torture show. And we get to, you know, he's just like, it's like a non-participant, non-fun version of Jackass where, like, a guy goes around and just starts torturing himself and, like, stretching out all his limbs. He's like, watch me break my leg in the Beneil fight. Watch me break my arm in the Oliveira fight. Watch me break my brain in the Gaethje fight. Like, it's like this whole, like, every time out, it's like, oh, it's hard to watch.
And then, and like, it's a new thing every time, right?
Yeah, and it's like something else. Or like his other leg is, like, his shin's all bleeding in the Nate fight. Like, he just can't, like, hold it together, you know? And, like, it's obviously sad to watch, because I used to make the joke where it was like, And it became real, where I used to make this joke for you, where I'm like, Fenyo is like the, Tony Ferguson is like the Mexican uncle at the family barbecue who, like, you know, nobody wants to go around, like, hey, Chico, come here. Oh, shit, it's Uncle Tony. Hey, Uncle Tony. Hey, come here for a second. Come on, let's go. No, we gotta go over there. Come on. Has he been drinking? I don't know. It looks like it. Let's make it fast. Hey, Uncle Tony. He's the Mexican uncle that wants to show you his knife trick at the family barbecue over and over again, and that you already saw. He's like, let me show you my knife trick. Like, oh, we already saw that, Uncle Tony. Thanks. Like, are you sure? Why don't you show some respect, huh? Show some respect. You used to come around. Now you don't even say hi. You're too good for your Uncle Tony. Like, he's like, now he's like, he's that guy, right?
Exactly like that. Yeah.
He's that guy now. And But it's a Tony Ferguson torture show on one end, and then I'm like, oh, shit, then you got Chiesa, who, like, I forget, like, I was searching for his name when I was referencing the Heavy Hands guys making their joke about Michael Johnson, like, being into autoerotic asphyxiation, because that's right up my alley, because, you know, like, fucking take a shot, Danton makes a David Carradine joke on the podcast, I can't help myself, right? But, like, it's actually appropriate here because, like, because someone was like, and I wish I remember it because on the live chat, the last podcast, Fenyo, someone's like, why does Chiesa just, like, get choked out randomly for a guy who's so good at chokes? And, like, the answer was right there. The real answer was it's because he's got the David Carradine syndrome. It's the only way Chiesa can come, folks. Like, if Chiesa could fight with a choker on, I think he would.
It's a shame that Mikey Chiesa never walked out to INXS.
Oh my god, yes! Oh my god. Could you imagine he just walks out with, like, a choker and, like, assless chaps, you know what I'm saying? I'm ready for Snapdown City! So he looks like Rob Halford from Judas Priest coming out there. Like, that's what But that's what I pictured this fight, though. It was like this, like, I that was my joke rounding back to the alternative card format. I'm like, main card, I'm like, hell, you could argue this fight deserves to take place in a sex dungeon, you know? You got the pain, the guy who's like, give me pain, oh yeah, oh, like Tony, and then you got, like, the choke me guy, you know? Like if I could picture this fight, like, I picture, like, Michael Chiesa on all fours in front of Tony Ferguson working a hacksaw on his leg, trying to cut off his leg, while Tony Ferguson works a choke chain from above him, and they're both getting off. Like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. They're both just like, I'm sorry. Sorry to put that mental image in your guys. But if I told you that was the breakdown for this fight ahead of time, would you be like, that kind of checks out?
Yeah, yeah. And it was kind of like that, actually.
And on that note, we'll cut the free preview short. If you want the full version, of course, you can check it out live or after the fact as a YouTube Dan Clan member. That's my YouTube channel, at DanTomMMA. Same address, at DanTomMMA for Substack for a couple bucks more to access the full show as well as all the extra content that I do there. But I'm taking next week off for my birthday, so enjoy your week and protect your neck.
Well, I could have been a famous singer if I had someone else's voice, but failures always sounded better. Let's fuck it up, boys. Make some noise!